Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vashon.
That was the voice of one of my...
Oh, wait a minute. Hang on. Something is wrong here. I'm not getting you. I am not... Oh, you know what? I got it. Go ahead. Sorry.
Truman is censoring me. I'm going to take him to the Supreme Court and see if I can get immunity when I kill him, right?
Yeah, sorry, man. Somebody punched off a couple of buttons here.
I wonder who that would have been.
Hey, wasn't me. Sorry.
All right. So that was the voice of one of my favorite people I have ever known, Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. Together, we the Brieflys keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of mostly intelligent discussion of current events faced with, but also laced with, hopefully, humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. So let's introduce the Brieflys and our guest. Engineering the show from behind the board of the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon is retired Alaska Airlines captain, certified flight instructor, Vachon Airport commissioner, and infamous treetop flyer, Truman O'Brien.
Infamous is correct. Good morning. Glad to be here.
Good to have you, Truman. So, is Kevin zooming in?
He is.
All right. There he is.
I see him waving.
I see him on the Zoom screen. So zooming in from... So Kevin, where are you now?
We are... Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me coming in
from... Yeah,
we got you.
Columbia, we're at the infamous, famous Harriet Bay Inn, where we're checking in with the proprietress to see whether the ghost is still active. There's some uncertainty. But so far, they claim the ghost is still here, so we're going to keep our eyes open.
Fantastic. So that's the voice of Indivisible Vachon in the Vachon Climate Action Group, in addition to chairing the Equity, Social Justice, and Inclusion Committee of the Vachon Maury Island Community Council, is our tireless defender of democracy, Kevin Jones. So has the cruise gone well so far?
It has, but we're sort of in an internet desert. So I have two questions. Number one, on our intro, how intelligent does our conversation have to be? And number two, is Steve Bannon actually in jail?
Yeah.
There are resounding no's probably to both of those. Haven't heard about Bannon. He's supposed to
report. He
reported today.
Oh, he did yesterday.
Yesterday. All right.
Okay. Very good. We're trying to catch up here. We've been on anchor for the last 4 days. We've been dodging gale force winds in Johnstone Strait, and we fought our way in the lee shore down to Harriet Bay Inn. So we're here in the calm now, relative calm.
Fantastic. Wow, a port in every storm, right?
You need to find them for sure.
Also joining us again is the newest member of the Brieflys, a 1995 graduate of Vachon High School, the fantastic leader of the Fairy Alliance, a playwright, Vachon Island Fire and Rescue's newest commissioner, and all-around community doer, Amy Dreher. Welcome, Amy.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
And across the board from Truman is Craig Bellis, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, Constitutional Law and Criminal Procedure Professor, International Arbiter and Mediator, Ice Cream Maker, we need to know more about that, and Truman's fellow infamous treetop flyer. Welcome, Craig.
Thanks, Bruce. I thought we were cutting down on those on those intros.
I pulled up an old script and I thought, hey, why not sort of toot our own horns?
You know, I'm going to pick up a bunch of old ones and add them all together.
Oh my God!
That'll be next week.
We don't have enough time.
That'll be next week.
We got the Truman shows next week. Next week. We could do that.
We'll be talking about that. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Somebody, great minds, I think.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Maybe there's a place for that in the museum.
Wait another 20 years, right? Of course, there won't be time to talk about anything else on the show, but that's all
that's right,
too.
Right? That's right. Yeah.
So we have two very special guests today. One is a former executive director of the Vashon Heritage Museum and current director of the new permanent exhibit Special Projects, Elsa Kroonquist. Welcome, Elsa.
Thank you, Bruce. I'm happy to be here.
And the new executive director of the Vashon Heritage Museum, who has been in office now for 1 month, starting June 1st, is Greta Simpson. Greta, welcome.
Thank you, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
And I'm historian Bruce Holman. Per our usual practice, let's take a moment and check in with everyone about what special things you've experienced this past week. So, Amy, tell us all about the ferry excursion.
Oh, the ferry excursion. Well, my exciting news from last week was outside of the ferry excursion. But yeah, we had about 50 folks ride a special sailing of the water taxi. King County did a sort of kickoff event for us. And Representative Mosqueda was there and folks from King County Marine Division of Metro. And we had sort of a special junket of Islanders go over and sort of, you know, wave at the press and take a ride. Very, very, Virginia Five-esque, right? Sort of, you know, waving from the dock as you come in. But it was really great. And Rick Wallace from Islanders for Ferry Action spoke on behalf of our group and really just sort of, I think, delivered the message, a great day for Vashon, because it really is a great day for Vashon. And I took the water taxi over yesterday. There was no way I wasn't going to ride on that first day of expanded service. And we went over, we took the noon boat over to downtown and we walked around the market, walked around the waterfront, you know, dropped a whole bunch of money to stimulate the downtown Seattle economy and came back on the 5:30 boat. And it was absolutely lovely. And it was great. On our way over, there was probably about 25 other folks on the boat. Someone was going to the airport. There was a family that was going downtown, some cyclists who were commuting. So it's doing it. It's happening.
You know, it didn't even just dawn on me. You could take it downtown for the airport, couldn't you? And then just grab the airporter from there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What a good idea. Didn't think about that.
Yep. It definitely addresses that midday gap in the ferries. Great. You can still get to the airport during the middle of the day. Imagine that.
Great.
Yeah.
There's hope yet.
Indeed.
So, Elsa, how has your week been other than frantically getting the museum ready to open?
That's pretty much been it. Frantically getting the museum open. I'm pretty excited. I've been doing everything from spending the weekend painting, display shelving. Yeah, they don't let me do the fine stuff, so but it's important to be primed. Making sure the word gets out about Friday and our grand opening. And we have a lot of people who are responding off island and on island to that. So that's what I've been up to.
Sounds like a fun week.
Oh, it has been.
Hey, Truman, what have you been up to?
Well, first I have to say that last week our cousin had some rather serious surgery over in Tacoma. And so I was going to go over to support. And I'm in the waiting room, and I don't see any of the rest of the family. And I keep going, well, where are you guys? Well, we're in waiting room C. And I go, well, I thought I was in C. Anyway, this goes on and on and on. I was in the wrong hospital. Oh, boy. You know, it's just one of those days. But I will have to tell you one real exciting thing. Our great friend Pam Ingalls, you know, the incredibly wonderful artist, has a new exhibit in the Museum of Russian Art in Minneapolis. It's the first time they've ever let a non-Russian show there because all of her paintings are done in the Russian style. Well, my good buddy from my Vietnam buddy, lives in Minneapolis. I sent him a note and said, hey, you know, I have this friend that has this great show there. If you get a chance, you should go by. He said, I'm always up for a good art crawl. Well, it turns out that he went yesterday and met Pam. Fantastic. And so they spent quite a bit of time together. Both of them delighted to have met each other. And they sent me pictures of them together. Anyway, it was just really exciting for me to have make that connection That's and make fantastic. That introduction. So there you go.
That's fantastic. Greta, how about you? What's your week been like?
Oh, it's been wonderful. As you said, I've been coming to the end of my first month with museum, so it's been amazing to meet everyone and talk to everyone, learn the ins and outs, and it really is an incredible amount that the institution does and does very well. So it's been fun to do all that learning, and then of course to also watch the exhibit coming together and the culmination of so many years of work, and I get to jump in right at the end and see it come to fruition. So it's been really wonderful.
Great, thanks. So Craig, what's your week been like?
It hasn't been nearly as exciting as everybody else's. I got a new iPhone.
Do you know how to use it yet?
I do. Actually, I've been a Mac and an Apple user since 1986. And nothing else. I get into a place that has PCs, and you know, I bought my first Mac when I was at the University of California at Berkeley, at the bookstore. I had a discount, and I looked at the IBM based computer manual, which looked like the New York phone book, and I looked at the Mac that looked like a little pamphlet, and I thought, I think I'll get the Mac. And I've been with them ever since. But we went over to, my wife and I got them, and we went over to Tacoma to the Apple store and had them do the migration, because one time I did the migration. Actually, I didn't do it. They did it. And they screwed up and lost half of our information. So I'm real careful now in the migration. The other thing was at the Coop. It was theme night last Friday. Steve Amston had Highways, Byways was the theme. And I sang the Battle of Thunder Road at that. And we had changed keys in the audition. And I think I and the band got different messages. So by the time I was done, I looked over at Steve and I go, I think I covered all the potential keys we talked about, you know. So it was not my finest moment, but I had fun.
But any good musician knows how to fake it, right?
That's right. Just keep going. Keep rolling.
Never let the show stop.
That's right.
Sounds good. So, Kevin, beside battling gale force winds and nasty seas, what other delightful things have you been doing?
Well, we've been revisiting favorite places, doing some mountain biking, a bit of hiking, a little beach walking. We've been out on anchor for the last 4 days at Octopus Islands and at Thurman Marine Beach Park. But also sort of the highlight of the week is to say that the huckleberry crop on Quadra Island is particularly spectacular this year. About 3 hours, and I've got enough for probably 4 pies here. So we've been enjoying huckleberries on our breakfast cereal, and it's just kind of wonderful to have a chance to meander around through the forests of Quadra Island, finding huckleberry bushes and stocking up the galley with them.
Great. We're all jealous of you.
Indeed.
And those huckleberry pies.
Man, oh man, they're good.
So my week has been eventful, not only trying to get the museum ready to go on Friday for the grand opening, but also trying to get all the boats ready for summer. So kayaks for the grandkids and kayaks for our kids and Pam and I and our boats and our rowboats and a crab boat and just sort of the list goes on and on. But my grandson, Theodore, who is 6 years old, rode the first honorary passenger only ferry, to Seattle. He was interviewed by Como News, and he was ecstatic. He can't wait to be a celebrity.
That's cool.
So but he had a great time, and it was really neat watching the newscasts of that. So very, very nice to have that as part of our ferry system right now. So that's been my week. But Friday night at the museum, we're going to have a grand opening. So it should be great fun. So this week, and today, like every day, is a very special day. Today is 2 days from the 4th of July. It's 3 days until the opening of the new permanent exhibit at the Heritage Museum, and it's 17 days until the start of Strawberry Festival on July 19th. It's the 2nd of July, which is National I Forgot Day, or as I like to call it, Joe Biden's Debate and Answer Day.
Oh, boy.
It's also World UFO Day, so it's time for us to revisit the Maury Island incident again.
You know, we're thinking about moving the flying saucer out to the front of the airport so that we get a little more visibility. So we're thinking about that in honor of that event. So.
We'd love to have it moved to the museum.
I don't know about that.
So historically, July 2nd is the real Independence Day for the United States. On July 2nd, the Continental Congress declared its freedom from Great Britain when it voted to approve a resolution submitted by Delegate Richard Henry Lee of Virginia declaring, quote, that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. So John Adams, you know, sort of campaigned for years to make July 2nd Independence Day. But the Declaration of Independence, sort of the list of why they passed that resolution, was actually signed 2 days later. So that's why July 4th becomes Independence Day.
Well, right. Not only, you know, it's interesting. A lot of people have trouble with those dates and everything. And the it took how many more years before we won that war?
Right.
It was 1884 or something, I think.
Yep. 1776 it started. Yeah,
It took many, many years before we actually did win our independence. We declared our independence, but it took a while again.
Until 1887, until we had the Constitution. So it was not an immediate thing.
Wow.
But it's when it all started, if you will. So also... this is a good way to segue into talking about our guest, Elsa, with Elsa and Greta, about the celebration you have planned for July 5th. So welcome and thank you for joining the Brieflys on The Voice of Vashon. And let's start with you, Elsa. Tell us about yourself, how you came to be an Islander, how you got involved with this new permanent exhibit at the Heritage Museum.
Sure. You know, I want to say I'm really honored to be among all of you. That was quite a write-up that you gave for everybody. That was pretty amazing. So I've been on the island now we moved here 25 years ago, visited the island every few years, just loved Vashon and how are we ever going to move here? So we finally had very young children. And I want to say we went to a birthday party at David Smith's beautiful home. Remember David? And that was the deciding. A week later, we had a home picked out and moved here. And I haven't looked back. Everybody else has grown up and moved off the island, but I'm still here. So... 5 years ago, joined the museum as their first executive director. And at that time, the board said, well, we have this permanent exhibit that that we're raising funding for, that we've been working on for at least 5 years. And you're going to need to finish it off. And so I thought, oh, piece of cake, finish it off. So I would say... I'm involved in the permanent exhibit to raise those funds, and I'm very proud that I joined with the museum and with, I have to mention, Maria Glantz here, who together with the permanent exhibit committee and a few historians, wrote the NEH grant, applied for that, wrote that, and received it. So that was my very simple job to do for the museum.
So you sort of glossed over it, but tell us a little bit about the NEH grant and the significance for Vashon for the museum. I mean, what is the NEH and what does that all mean?
How deep do you want me to go?
Well, we only have 40 more minutes. So.
This is pretty amazing. It's quite an honor. I mean, the Vashon Island should feel very honored to be recognized by the National Endowment for the Humanities. It's a very a big deal to receive this grant. We were one of five organizations, and we were to receive a grant of this size, $287,000. Wow. And I mean, we're up there with the Burke Museum and universities across the nation and large organizations. So to be recognized by the NEH, that's the big honor. And, you know, it also recognizes all of the work that the museum did ahead of this application. Years and years of partnerships and applying for, well, creating exhibits and awards that received nationally recognized awards. And so that helped. We could explain that, as we have to do in a grant, that we're on the radar nationally. We're recognized. This is what we're producing. It also means, I don't think it's going to be easier, but it also means that nationally there may be more funding that the museum can receive, other organizations on the island can receive from these national funding. So I hope it makes it easier for everybody else.
Great. Well, thanks. Mm-hmm. So, Greta, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to be an islander, your thoughts about the new permanent exhibit, and your role as a Heritage Museum Executive Director.
Mm-hmm. So I think that my husband and daughter and I have been here for 5 months, so we're very new to the island. I grew up in Shoreline, born in Ballard, but grew up in Shoreline, but had been living for the last 10 years in the Bay Area. We wanted to move back to Western Washington, and my husband, who's a camp director, he got a job at Camp South and as the director of camping, and so we moved out here. And maybe our first day maybe that we were here, we were looking at the Beachcomber, and we saw that the museum was looking for a new executive director. And I have my background in museums. I was working at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California prior to this, and I thought, well, that just seems like an incredible coincidence. I definitely have to apply for that. Mm-hmm. And here we are. So I feel incredibly lucky and happy to be chosen, and the museum is so wonderful. The permanent exhibit. Well, I'm also very lucky to be coming right at the tail end of Elsa's incredible work, Bruce, the board's incredible work on this project, and I get to see it finally come to fruition, and it does look amazing. I'm excited for everyone to get to come and see it. Everyone is going to be thrilled to see our history up there, beautiful and shining. And now it's the museum's job, my job, to keep bringing people in and to engage the community in new ways. We have this incredible space, so we want to work with the community to bring school groups in, to have continued adult learning. We're working on a speaker series going forward, and I think we're going to have some fun opportunities to engage the community.
Great. Truman?
You know that Bruce has been raving, I mean, truly raving about this new permanent exhibit for quite some time now. So tell us, how is it organized? And I mean, either of you, feel free. And what is it that makes it so special this time?
Bruce, I'll turn that over to you.
No, let's hear Elsa.
Oh, Elsa, let me get started. So how it's organized is there's seven galleries. And so You start with our natural history and how Vashon was formed, going to the Chwabops Gallery, and then on to the first contact and settlement and the warriors, the post-war years, and then contemporary. And then we also, contemporary Vashon today, and we also have a rotating exhibit area. So we'll have those special exhibits that we've really become famous for. We also have a Norm Edson exhibit. I mean, there's been a lot created and added on into this existing space. Let's see. And how does it... We opened up the exhibit. We opened up the space so that hopefully when people walk in, their eyes will raise to the ceiling. It is a open and fresh and interesting new... interactives. Okay, I have to start with, and when you first walk in, there's a Colombian mammoth that I just love. And I won't say it's going to blow your mind, but you're really going to be impressed. Mm-hmm. And it's a space that is warm and inviting and fresh and new, and we can get into details about all the interactives. I don't know if you want to do that right now or not.
Well, you know, one of the things that you said that really intrigues me is the fact that there are different galleries. And I think that's really significant, because you can go from one to the other and see the progression of, you know, what's happened. I think that's really exciting. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
So, Greta, what's your reaction to that question?
The question of
what makes it so exciting for you?
Oh, well, I think that it's really exciting because, I mean, the Indigenous people have so much voice in the exhibit, and the Permanent Exhibit Committee has done a fabulous job of focusing on these turning points that I think are really. Really interesting. So instead of going from just time period to time period, they kind of have these significant moments at which the course of history shifts and things start changing. And it's just a really beautiful way to look at how things not only have changed, but how they could have been different. And it gets you thinking, oh, what about this turning point? What if it had turned slightly differently? Mm. And I think it's really thought-provoking in that way.
Yeah, and can you talk a little bit more about the involvement of the Puyallup tribe and other community groups in the development?
Yeah, but I'd like to have Bruce help me with that. But for years now, the museum has been working with the Puyallup tribe in a partnership, establishing a partnership on many past exhibits that we've done. And so we really have to give a lot of credit to Lori Tucker and Bruce Holman and Raina Holtz, who have been working with the cultural director of the Puyallup tribe, Brandon Rainon. They've been meeting at least once a month and to go over the gallery, that the Chwabops gallery, and through the We have the Puyallup tribe or the Chwabops people going through the entire exhibit, and that partnership, to be able to ask Brandon for like a full afternoon of time once a month was pretty amazing, that he could create that time for us. So it's becoming, I hope, a stronger and stronger relationship with the Puyallups, and it's not just the museum. I mean, we're inviting them over, and they're making time to come over to share meals with us and to work on projects with us, and create that relationship. It's been very important, and it takes a long time to develop.
Greta, anything to add to that?
No, I think that's a beautiful description of the work that's been done.
And also, maybe you can elaborate a little bit with work with other groups in the community, you know, through special exhibits like In and Out and Natural Wonder and, you know, Joy and Heartache and other kinds of things that have been incorporated into this.
Well, exactly. I mean, who was involved in building this exhibit? The whole community. And we looked to all the past exhibits that Bruce just mentioned and all of the partners who helped build those special exhibits. And they came back to help create the Vashon Nature Center and the geology, Vashon geology folks. They came and they were the curators of the natural, I always want to call it natural wonder, but the natural history part of the museum. And then the Mukai Farm and Garden and the folks from the Japanese community are working on. We have a portion of an exhibit that talks about the internment, and of course those can also will be stories from our previous exhibit on the internment. So the list goes on and on.
So you mentioned that you have incorporated some of your earlier temporary exhibits. Are there plans going forward for more temporary type exhibits besides the permanent collection? And do you have any thoughts about that? Or
absolutely, a museum needs to have those temporary exhibits because those exhibits allow us to go deeper into what's in the permanent exhibit and what's relevant and what's happening today, what happened in the past, and explore how it's what's happening today. And Greta, do you feel comfortable talking about our current?
Yeah, absolutely. The Gibb Damon Political Memorabilia Exhibit, We the People, will be going up. It'll be opening on that first Friday, same day as the permanent exhibit. It's a really cool collection of political memorabilia for going back decades. And then there's this amazing timeline that looks at voting on Vashon, and it compares how Vashon voted to how the nation voted, and there's some exploration of why, and it's really fascinating. And again, I think gets you thinking about now. And of course, we encourage everyone to get out there and vote. So that's a really exciting exhibit, and we will have these changing exhibits about on a 6-month rotating schedule. So, you know, watch that space. There's some pretty exciting projects to come.
I was just wondering real quick, if you were developing the Bruce Holman AI chat GPT so yeah, that we can have in perpetuity access to Bruce's wisdom. Is that part of the new museum?
I don't know if they'll be able to download Bruce or not. No. You know, that's asking quite a lot. Yeah. It'd have to take quite a bit of memory to handle that. No, just one quick question. You said the temporary space. So is that a space that will, I mean, that a particular space that will be rotating temporary?
Okay,
good. Thanks.
You know, museum science, if you will, I guess has changed over the years, at least for me, anecdotally it has. I'm not a student of that area, but you know, the museums used to be fairly sterile places where you'd go in. There's a museum in the middle of Prague that is all a geology. It has room after room after room of rocks. That's all it's got. And you just look at the rock and the name next to the rock. Now, it sounds like you've upped the ante in terms of interactiveness at the museum, not to mention the fact that there's a mammoth standing there as you walk into the place, and another fellow in a black outfit. But that's a different story. What are there specific, I just wanted to drill a little deeper into this, are there some specific new exhibits that are special interactive type of exhibits?
Yeah, I think you're right. You're absolutely right, especially after COVID during COVID, that museums became even more sterile. So now we have a lot of interactives. Every gallery has at least one interactive. And we designed those for tried to reach every interest. It's a lot of hands-on, so there'll be a lot of wiping down of material at the end of the day. So there's one of my personal favorites is the in the Schwabach Gallery, there's a Tschuolschuzi language interactive. So come on in and push some buttons and listen to the language. And it's an onomatopoeia type of language. And you will be, with these interactives, as you go around, you'll be asked a question and you'll want to explore that interactive to find the answer and to think about the answer. And that is probably one of the most exciting things about the new exhibit is these interactives.
Cool. Yeah.
So I hear there's an interactive map. So tell the folks a little bit about what that map will be able to create for them in terms of their interaction with the museum.
This map is fantastic.
It is so cool.
It is. It's illustrated by Bruce Morser.
Oh boy!
There are five maps. It's a digital maps on a very large screen, and it will go through Vashon. You'll be able to see Vashon in 1750, clear through to 2020. And I would like to turn this over to Bruce Hallman to talk about.
The map is an amazing sort of development, I think. You see it right when you walk in the museum. And Bruce Morser, he did a wonderful job. I mean, if you've ever visited his installation at Center, Celebrating Center, if you have not, go down to the Vashon Center for the Arts, walk in, and a little sort of side atrium there is this amazing installation, Celebrate Center. And he's got maps, and he's got movable sort of panels. It's all kinds of really interesting stuff. And so sort of focusing on that, we asked Bruce to help to develop and design five maps. So we have a map from 1750, which is pre-contact, pre-Vancouver, pre-disease. So the Schwabach people at that point. And then 1890, when the first European settlers are first here. And then 1920, when the island was probably the most hopping kind of place it was, with 32 ferry docks and 16 school districts and 15 community stores and churches all over the place. And then a 1960 map and then a 2020 map. And what Bruce Morser did in designing those maps is he used the color palette from the exhibit. So each gallery has a different color palette, and he incorporated all of those into the maps. Mm. So it's very striking. And ultimately, the maps are going to be clickable interactive maps. So you'll be able to click on Burton, and you'll see a pop-up screen that will tell you about Burton, and then there'll be a menu there, and you can click on the Burton Church or the Burton Store or the Masonic Hall or whatever, and a screen will pop up and tell you a little bit of the history of that building or that space. And the whole maps, all of the maps are designed that way. And so initially when we open on Friday, it's just going to be a sort of a static screensaver kind of thing. You'll be able to see the maps. And then over the next few months, we'll implement that sort of clickability, if you will. But it's one of the central pieces, I think, at the museum. And it's very exciting.
You know, Bruce,
for those of you who don't.
Oh, sorry, you were.
Would I step on somebody?
You stepped on Kevin. But
okay.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Go ahead, Bruce. Bruce, I've been doing some catching up on your reading.
I'm the only one here that doesn't have.
And this book, Breaking Ground, is about the Tsiwatsin village in Port Angeles.
Right.
Which is an industrial waterfront, but in the pre-contact period, it was home to thousands of indigenous tribal members.
Right.
And one of the things that with the conflict was that they developed the industrial community on top of all of these artifacts and ultimately on top of the cemetery, which resulted in some really violation of their ancestors who were put to rest there. They talked about how important the maps were and how critical it was that the maps should have been consulted to show where people really had spent their time. I thought it was really fascinating, and just the role of history in real life. This was in 2021, 2022, when all this came about. And so, you know, it's really relevant. I guess maybe it's not, it must have been later, a little, not quite that soon. But it's like in the last couple of decades, this was an activity that was really relevant to indigenous tribes. So, yeah, I'm glad you amplified the issue of those maps.
Yeah, and I think when you visit a museum and when you see Bruce Mercer's rendition of a 1750 map, which we worked extensively with the Puyallup tribe to develop, you will just be amazed at the number of sites around the island and the fact that there were 10 to 15,000 native people living on the island at that time. So pre-contact, pre-disease regimes, basically the island had the population then that it has now. And it's sort of hard for us to sort of put that in perspective. But I think Bruce's map and working with the Puyallup tribe, you'll be very impressed to see just how detailed that is.
Yeah, let me just do a quick follow-up. It was 2003 that this issue came up in the Port Townsend area. And so a few, anyway, just want to make sure that people knew that it's something that was really current. And it involved the governor, U.S. senators, all kinds of people got involved in this really important issue. And it said that it set the stage for how Washington State now approaches indigenous ancestral lands. So it was a good thing, but painful at the time.
And I'm curious, though, Bruce, on that, the 1750, did most of the indigenous people live on the shoreline then? I mean, because, you know, there are no roads. And
Basically, when you see that map, I mean, almost all the native people lived around Quartermaster Harbor. There were a few, there was a small village site at Tahlequah, there was a small site at Spring Beach, but basically it's all around Quartermaster Harbor. Okay. There were gathering sites, there were, you know, resource sites in the interior of the island, all around Maury Island. But you'll also be, I think, amazed that almost all of the native activity, Shuabapsha activity on Vashon, takes place south of Cemetery Road. So north of the center of the island was not really Shuabapsh territory, although it's traditional territory of the Shuabapsh. And they certainly used the interior of the island, but the shoreline of the island was not used heavily by the Shuabapsh. It was used by other native groups.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's all right. I'm the only one here who doesn't have headphones. We're short a pair of headphones. We got a full studio, and I don't. I may be doubling up on a question that Kevin, or a comment Kevin made. So go ahead, Bruce.
No.
Well, the only thing I was going to say was, just as an aside, for those of you who don't know Bruce Mercer, all you need to do is pick up a whole pile of your old National Geographics. And you see those fabulous drawings and artwork, the precision that he puts into those is just remarkable. He's got a groove in his brain that most people don't.
That's for sure.
And we tap that groove.
Absolutely.
Let me tell you
that. The map is so detailed, and there are so many interesting data points on these maps. I think that even without the interactivity, which will be really cool when it comes, you could spend a day flipping back and forth and looking at these visual data points that he has represented the island's ecology and all these things that you can see change over the years. It's incredibly fascinating.
You know, Craig and I, being pilots, you know, we've flown over the island quite a lot, and it really is astounding to me to see the island from above. And I mean, so I'm sure these maps are going to have the same effect on our psyche, you know, when we see what it's like.
Yeah, another aspect of the map that we'll be introducing fairly quickly here in July, early August, is a sixth map that's basically just an outline map of the island, and then it will have a clickable menu, so you'll be able to go and you'll be able to see an overlay map. So there'll be a map that just appears and overlays over that outline of the island of, say, all the roads in 1912.
Oh, wow.
Or all the property lines in 1925, are all the aerial photos. We have all the aerial photos beginning in 1936.
Wow.
The state of Washington began doing aerial surveys of the state in 1936, and every 10 years until the Landsat satellite started taking satellite photographs. So we're going to have basically every decade of aerial photographs. So you'll be able to see how the island changes, how forest cover changes,
wow.
you know, how buildings come up, how, you know, just how docks disappear, you know, just with these overlay maps. So that's going to be a very exciting part of it, too. So let me ask Greta and then Elsa, out of all of these things, all of these interactives, and we've talked about the map, so let's take that off the agenda here. What are, out of all of these interactives, what do you find most exciting? Greta?
Man, there are so many exciting interactives. I think there's the ferry voting interactive, so we have these little fuzzy balls so you can kind of cast your own vote. And I think that's really fun.
Yeah, I feel like I'm too close to the process because every interactive, as I said, we have a permanent exhibit committee and we sat down and asked the questions, you know, what do we want people to learn? What do we want them to enjoy? How will they interact with this? And so they all, every interactive is something that you'll have a chance to really stop and think about. You know, like you're gonna cast your vote, but you're going to think about that, why you're voting that way. And you're going to listen to, as I said, my personal favorite is the Tulshutsi language. And listen to that and engage. So just the come and see the museum. It and if you run through it the first time, if that's what you have to do, but you'll want to come back and spend some time. It's going to be wonderful.
I just wanted to ask a little bit about kids, like kids and families, and what's lined up there for our youth.
Yeah, so we're hoping to have a robust youth programming. We're hoping to, of course, get our field trips back on track, so get the kids from the schools coming in. And then we're also hoping to build a partnership with Camp South to bring kids in from camp. You know, sometimes, especially if they're coming from elsewhere, that can be kind of divorced from the history of the island. So to kind of incorporate a little bit of a grounding activity in coming to the museum to learn about the island's history and Chulbap's history will be pretty cool. So loads of fun stuff to come. Bruce?
You know, if the way I look at it is in working on this design process, it's sort of like I think the designers had this concept of every one of these interactives is designed for a kid or for the kid in an adult, you know, and so it's that kind of thing. Like, for instance, when you first walk in, there's a 3D, you know, sort of composite map of the island, sort of a topographical map, but also of the surrounding Puget Sound. And it's touchable, so you can run your hands over the island. You can feel how deep Puget Sound is. You can feel how high the island is. With the Chulbap language thing, it's just sort of hearing, you know, and sort of trying to guess, well, what does this word actually mean? There's a great tippy canoe kind of thing where you know, in a canoe culture, you know, losing a canoe or tipping over a canoe is a disaster. And so, you know, loading a canoe became very important. And so we have all these artifacts that you can load into a canoe, and it's on a tipping kind of thing. And
wow.
So your canoe has to stay balanced, you know. There's an agricultural kind of display of trying to match plants and fruits together, that kind of thing. The voting, I just love the voting. The voting's whether we should have a bridge or not.
Oh, sorry, bridge. I'm sorry.
Oh, boy, that ought to be fun.
And what we did, it's really going to be fascinating because there's two color sort of fuzzy balls, and you'll get one when you walk in, and one is for islanders and one is for off-islanders, and you get to vote yes for a bridge or no for a bridge, and so it's going to be very interesting to see how
that turns out. You're starting something, Bruce. Yeah, you're right, starting something. I can see the Vashonite's rant post now.
Right. You know, you mentioned one thing that struck me, and that was that taking a quick cruise through and then coming back. You know, very often when I go to a foreign city that I've never been to before, one of the things I like to do is take a city bus tour. And it gives you a chance just to kind of, get a feel of the city. And then you can say, I want to go back and look at that or that. And I think the same thing is going to apply here with the museum. That you'll, the first time through, you might want to just kind of do a kind of a skim through to look at everything and then come back and pick those things that you really want to delve into.
When we started this design process, it was really interesting. We were working with a group. What was the group the museum design group we were working with?
Pacific Studios.
Mm-hmm. We were working with them. And in one of the first meetings, they talked about, there's three kinds of visitors to museums. There's streakers and strollers and scholars. Wow. So the streakers are the people who just walk through and look at the museum and then move on. The strollers walk along and, something interesting, they'll stop and they'll read something, they'll stroll along. The scholars read every word of every topic, of every picture and that kind. And you have to design an exhibit for all three. And like you, Truman, I often, when I walk in a museum, rather than just diving in, I stroll through the museum. Yeah. Not quite streak through it, but I stroll through it and then go back to what really interests me. And I think you'll be able to do that in this exhibit.
And if you're married to the wife that I'm married to,
who is a PhD historian.
She is, and she's a scholar, so we have a hell of a time going through museums. I tend to stroll, and she tends to read, so I'm always running off and leaving her behind. I understand that completely.
So, Greta, Elsa, remind us again of when this museum opens and what can we look forward to?
So on Friday, first Friday, we're open. So it's the show is going to be the museum. Everybody stop on in. And from 5 until we close, 8, 9, whatever first Friday hours are, that's the grand opening. Then we'll be open the next day. We're open Sunday through, no, when are we? Oh, Wednesday.
she's
Wednesday
the exit.
Through Sunday. Yeah.
Thank you. Wednesday through Sunday, 1 to 4. Our new director may change those days and hours.
No plans to do that at
but
this time.
Greta, you should also talk about what is happening in our amazing backyard.
Oh, yes. We're going to have a hydro exhibit out in the beautiful garden that we have in the back. And it is going to be so fabulous. It's going to open around the time. It's going to open during our ice cream social, July 19th. So that'll be the grand opening of that. So we have another grand opening on the books. And that is just going to be so fun. And I think you'll really enjoy it. We've had some really great people working on that. Brian Breno. I know Kevin Sudduth donated his time to build it, and Island Lumber donated the materials. We have a couple other in-kind donors and incredible people. Dave Swain and Bob Katica have headed up that project in a lot of ways, and that team is just really fabulous. Yes, so another reason to come back to the museum in July.
Yeah, if you're willing to get up at 5 a.m. and go down Jensen Point on July 4th, you will see the hydroplanes sort of do their annual. They don't call it a race because they don't want to get into that sort of having permits to do it. But it's a cruise around the island by hydroplanes, which takes, on a good day, takes about 30 minutes or less. But Roger Stanley, who first did that in the mid-1950s, is donating his original hydroplane that first went around the island, designed by Ted Jones, very famous hydroplane designer, who lived on Vashon for a while, lived on the Burton Peninsula for a while. And so that's going to be the highlight of this hydro exhibit, is that first original Roger Stanley hydroplane.
Wow. Greta, do you live anywhere near the water?
I live down by Camp South, so okay. Fairly, yeah.
Yeah, well, you probably have been warned.
Yes, yeah, we'll hear it.
Because the first time this happened to me back 30-some years ago, I woke up and I started swatting at the bees around my head. And I, what in the world? Yeah. And now it's just a great tradition. I love it. So.
Yeah, I was just going to say that you wake up going, are there hornets in here? What is this, a wasp? What? Yeah, it's wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, so about 5:30 in the morning, make your way down to Jensen Point on July 4th. It's quite a party. Some people are there all night, but it's but about 4:30, 5 o'clock, they start sort of cranking up the hydroplanes and getting them out there and getting them warmed up. And just about 5:30, they take off, and bam, by 6 o'clock, most of them are back. Those that make it are back.
Yeah. So how many this year? Do you know, Bruce?
I do not. I've not heard
of them. I saw there were about 4 or 5 of them up by the Kevin, do you have information on that?
I don't know. I was just going to say that the great viewing of the last portion of the race from Camp South. So it's many vantage points are possible.
Great. Oh, yeah. Well,
great. I have a 2-year-old, so I'll be up anyway. I'll make my way down there.
Okay, well, we're really running short of time. Let me just ask both Greta and Elsa again. Why should people come out and see this new museum? Greta, why should anybody come out on Friday?
Oh, because it's your history. That's one of the things that the exhibit has done really well. There's not one story. There are a multiplicity of stories, and it's your story at the museum. So definitely come down. Hopefully, you know, let your voice be heard using the interactives. Be in there enjoying what is really yours. And I'm going to hand it over to Elsa.
Oh, that was excellent. Yeah, it's your history. And if you're a visitor to the island, you might be seen there also. And you'll learn a lot about the island, an overview of the island. It's something that Vashon should be very proud of. It's absolutely beautiful.
So that's Friday. It starts at what time? 5 p.m.?
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock, so 7 or thereabouts, at the Heritage Museum on First Friday, this Friday. All right, so we've just got a couple minutes left. And also, Greta, please stay and join the conversation. Not that we'll have much conversation, because I'm going to ask Craig about two things. In your infinite wisdom as a jurist, should Joe Biden continue to run? And question number two, what in the hell did the Supreme Court do yesterday?
No kidding.
Well, I mean, the Supreme Court basically enshrined a king in the United States, went beyond kind of the worst possible scenario in terms of their grant of immunity to the president, upset the balance of power between the three branches of government. And that's why elections count. When we have Supreme Court justices that subscribe to particular philosophies, you know, they can't help but infect their decisions, and those decisions typically can stick around for generations. So that's what happened. Should Joe, boy, what, how many, what are we got, 30 seconds? Should Joe Biden run? You know, that's a very multifaceted and difficult question. I love Joe Biden. A question is whether or not Joe Biden is the best person to beat Trump, from my vantage point, my political vantage point. But the other side of the coin is, I can think of other candidates who would be good, but they probably need more than a few weeks in order to be able to convince the rest of the country, especially the heartland and the deep South, that they are viable candidates. So we're in a bit of a bind if you're a Democrat.
Quick question. Is there any way to overturn that decision, that SCOTUS decision? Or are we just stuck
No, it's
with
based
it?
On the Constitution. At least they claim it's based on the Constitution, right. Even though immunity is nowhere mentioned in the Constitution.
Yeah, exactly.
No, there's no way to really overturn it.
Could a new court review it again?
The Supreme Court can overturn a precedent. You know, I mean, we did away with slavery, or you could pack the court.
Yeah,
okay. You could make the court have 12 people on it, that sort of thing. Okay. But it's a difficult one to say the least. So, oh, and by the way. Here's all this talk about Biden, and they say this is the first time the Secret Service ever let a convicted felon that close to a current president of the United States.
Yeah, Truman.
Yeah, I just want to get in a quick word about next week before we sign off, and that is, you folks that are listening to us, we're going to become a podcast very shortly, and next week is going to be... an introduction of our podcast. And to do that, we're going to talk a little bit about Brian Brown and his legacy and what he's given us. And then we're going to really get in-depth introduction of each of the current briefleys. So that's going to be next week on the 9th.
How much time have we got for that show?
It's going to be a long one. It's going to be a long one. So.
All right. So for Elsa, Greta, Amy, Kevin, Truman, Craig, and me, thank you for joining the Briefly today, and we have a Truman Show focusing on Brian Brown and his legacy next week. Thank you for joining us.